President Donald Trump pulled the United States out of the Paris Agreement on June 1st, but since then, other countries, U.S. governors, and mayors around the world are reaffirming pledges to lower their carbon emissions.
Tengo que lamentar la decisión del presidente de los Estados Unidos de retirarse de el tratado que se firmó en París para proteger el planeta.
That was President Juan Manuel Santos from Colombia, renewing his commitment with the Paris Agreement after the United States announcement.
Nosotros, los colombianos, vamos a seguir comprometidos.
On June 17, Colombia ratified the Paris Agreement, becoming the latest country to do so in the region. Although Latin America only contributes to 9% of global emissions, countries in the region chose the UN framework to push for ambitious efforts to fight climate change. I'm Luisa Leme with ASCOA Online, and I spoke with Guy Edwards, research fellow at Brown University's Institute for the Environment and Society, about what is ahead for Latin America after the Paris Agreement. He explained it to me, countries are finding silver linings for their economy while rushing against time to stop floods, landslides, and rising temperatures.
You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en foco.
América Latina en foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
Guy Edwards, thank you so much for speaking with the Council today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Luisa, very much for the invitation to join you.
Guy, what do you think it was Latin American countries' role in closing the Paris Agreement at the first place?
Well, Latin American countries have adopted leadership positions at the UN climate change negotiations probably since 2008 in particular going forwards. And Peru, for instance, was the first developing country to put forward a voluntary emissions pledge. That was followed quickly by both Mexico and Brazil. And the idea behind this was that these countries are very vulnerable to climate change impacts, but they appreciate that because Latin America as a whole only contributes roughly 9% of global emissions, as a region they can't do enough by themselves, but by putting forward voluntary pledges, they could perhaps coax larger polluting nations to kind of up their own level of ambition, and that would be good for the whole process. And these countries have been pushing ambitious positions at the negotiations since then. And this really culminated in 2015 with the adoption of the Paris Agreement.
What are countries doing outside of the negotiations realm, but at home, to meet those goals?
Most countries in the region have now ratified the agreement. And as you say, Colombia is the latest country to do so. Many of them have been very enthusiastic about not only ratifying it as soon as possible, but in the wake of President Trump's decision to withdraw from the agreement, there have been some very strong statements emanating from the region. The reason they're doing that is not only because of this preference for a multilateral solution. It's also because a number of these countries in the region are now looking at the climate change problem in tune with their development goals. So putting it another way, they see tackling climate change as a prerequisite to generating prosperity for their citizens.
The economies that you cited, especially Brazil, Mexico, they are also trying to kind of revamp their economy and their development model in a way of like, we're not going to be solely based on commodities. Is it possible to revamp economies the size of Brazil and Argentina and still reduce those emissions and meet those goals?
Yes. Of course, this is a monumental challenge, and one can't downplay how complex and difficult this transition to a low carbon climate resilient economy will be. But I think what's important to stress is that Latin America is in a very advantageous position. And to give one example, its abundance of renewable energy resources is really pretty staggering. And if we just think of like the Atacama Desert for solar, if we think about the potential for geothermal along both through Central America and through the Andes, there's wonderful potential there. In 2016, in a report produced by the Multilateral Development Banks and Bloomberg's New Energy Finance, it's called Climate Scope, Chile ranked top in Latin America and second only to China globally for its ability to attract levels of clean energy investment. The International Finance Corporation estimates that Latin America and the Caribbean could represent $1 trillion of clean energy investment opportunities by 2040, which is a pretty staggering amount. So it's little surprise that this year in Argentina, President Mauricio Macri has declared 2017 as the year of renewable energy. And I think this is really showing policymakers and the private sector that the low carbon transition is not something for kind of sandal wearing hippies, but this is very much an economic issue.
And I'm going to present another problem for us.
Okay, please.
Latin American countries who have all these ambitious goals and this potential to grow their economy, they also have accountability problems. We are talking about a region affected by a major corruption scandal that is connected with a very large infrastructure company. Can we find ways to see that those commitments are actually becoming a reality?
Well, that's an incredibly fair point. Within the Paris Agreement, the transparency mechanism, which is currently being negotiated, the idea is that a robust framework will help facilitate countries to look at each other's pledges, to see what the Chinese are doing, see what Germany's doing, or the EU, or whoever. And at the same time, this can be translated onto the national scene, where the electorate citizens can see exactly what their countries have pledged to do. This transparency mechanism is key to building trust and confidence between countries themselves, but also between governments and their citizens.
Speaking about trust,
the United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord.
What happens now after President Donald Trump decides the United States, the largest country, and let's say the country that would make the biggest difference by signing this agreement, says that he will withdraw from the agreement? And what would be then Latin America's role in this new context?
This is really the million-dollar question, and it's really a fascinating one. I mean, as you say, the US is the largest historical emitter, is the world's largest economy. Clearly, its departure from the Paris Agreement is a great loss. However, the US won't actually be leaving the agreement until 2020 because of specific clauses within the Paris Agreement. So the US won't be going anywhere anytime soon. That doesn't mean that the federal government won't be able to start pulling back on its commitments. However, what's encouraging is the fact that the next government, if it was inclined to rejoin the agreement, could do so within 30 days. So I think what people are thinking is that this potentially is a very serious but a short-term blip. So investors, institutional investors, pension funds, etc., that are looking at these long-term trends in terms of the decarbonization of the global economy, the preference for renewables, batteries, electric vehicles, they're thinking, well, this decision by the administration is unfortunate, but over the next few decades, this shift is just gonna get faster. So we're not really going to change our investment decisions necessarily. Of course, some might, but there seems to be considerable pushback against this rather short-sighted idea. And it's very encouraging that states, California, cities, New York, and around the world, and businesses have really come out in favor of the agreement. And this is perhaps the greatest silver lining of President Trump's decision to abandon the Paris Agreement, is that it's really galvanized what will hopefully translate into international action on climate change. And I think what we will probably see is two different approaches from the region. The first one being that as the US kind of pulls back on its climate change work, Latin American countries will probably ramp up their cooperation with the EU, with Canada, and potentially China on climate change to fill any voids created by, for instance, the US cutting funding for its climate change cooperation programs in the region, kind of financing for clean energy as well. So hopefully the Canadians, the EU, and China could support Latin American countries fill this void. And I think Latin American countries are probably going to be relatively proactive in that endeavor. We saw that following Trump's decision to pull the US out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, for instance. Chile hosted a meeting in March this year with representatives from the 12 countries, plus China and South Korea were there as well to kind of explore different ways forward. It won't be antagonism towards the US. It will simply re-divert its attention to other regions. And it was very encouraging to see on a recent visit by Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, to both Argentina and Mexico, that the Mexican president, the Argentinian president, and the German Chancellor reaffirmed their commitment to the Paris Agreement.
The decision of Donald Trump's administration to invest less in low carbon industries, will it make a difference for Latin American countries?
In the case of the US, we might see some people talking about whether Latin American countries, especially given Mexico, for instance, and its proximity to the US, that if they continue with their climate change pledges and really kind of pushing this agenda forward, will they lose competitiveness vis-a-vis the US? And my sense is that won't necessarily hold too much stock with policymakers. It might be an argument that those interested in fossil fuels might kind of push forward to try and kind of muddy the water, or to try and kind of decrease confidence in implementing these Paris commitments. But I think on balance, it's the US would be. It's the US which is going to be losing competitiveness. Of course, the US, being the powerhouse that it is, controls vast sums of investment. And in terms of their clean energy investment in Latin America, you know, that could be reduced, which would undermine Latin America's goals. But if we look at the shift globally towards renewables, when we look at the vast sums being invested by the Chinese and the Europeans, and the focus on sustainable infrastructure from the multilateral development banks, I think the competitiveness kind of argument doesn't necessarily hold sway. I think Latin American countries can make themselves more competitive by implementing their Paris agreements, not holding back because they fear the US will have an advantage over them. What we might see behind the scenes is efforts by Latin American countries to lobby US lawmakers in relation to President Trump's proposed budget, which puts forward some pretty serious cuts for development assistance in the region, and which includes some of the climate change work as well. So we might see some efforts behind the scenes by these countries to try and persuade lawmakers to at least make these cuts less brutal, or to try and prevent them at all. Because at the end of the day, if we look at some of the climate change programs in Central America supporting agricultural communities, you know, kind of drought resistant crops and things like that, we will likely see increased migration from Central America, from droughts as people move out of the countryside to cities, or even from cities to other cities and then towards the US. So if one of the priorities of the current US administration is to try and reduce immigration from Central America, it doesn't really make much sense kind of cutting the legs off different programs which are actually meant to get to the root causes of what is driving people to immigrate in the first place.
There has been some talks about changes in immigration status for people from countries such as Honduras and El Salvador, who in the past received temporary protected status. They suffered the impact of a hurricane or extreme weather events in their countries, and then eventually receive temporary protected status in the United States, and they might lose that protection and be vulnerable to deportation. And, you know, like, there will be more cases of people who are refugees because of environmental events, right?
Well, there is the potential for that. Definitely. And if we look back at what one of the main drivers of the current crisis in Syria, that was a drought, which could have been exacerbated in terms of its intensity by global warming. Central America is a highly vulnerable region. Its leaders, its presidents have consistently voiced its concerns that Central America, given its geography and how vulnerable it is, as you say, to extreme weather events, be it hurricanes or floods or droughts, is in a very precarious position. And some of these nations are not very wealthy, and they are dependent on foreign development assistance. And I think what we will see, I hope, is that if the US administration does cut some of its development assistance to the region, the Canadians or the EU might actually be able to kind of make up at least some of the shortfall. And it's worth pointing out that the EU is currently the largest kind of aid provider to Latin American countries, especially on climate change. So these countries might actually, in some cases where they're able to and whether it's appropriate, be able to look at what they're doing themselves. So I'm talking specifically about fossil fuel subsidies, which in a number of countries are seen as kind of regressive and only really helping the wealthy. And similarly, energy efficiency measures can save hundreds of millions, and at the regional scale, billions of dollars per year, by plugging leaks in transmission lines, ensuring that people are actually paying for the power they use. So I think there's definitely a number of areas that countries could kind of embrace themselves. And when countries are thinking about their infrastructure investments in sanitation, transport, water, for instance, I know the Inter-American Development Bank just announced a pledge, I think, of $750 million to Central America following this conference in Miami with the VP Mike Pence and Secretary Tillerson and Secretary Kelly. So the focus now, if these countries are going to be building infrastructure, which they need to be because there's a considerable gap in terms of demand, this infrastructure has to be low carbon, sustainable, and climate resilient. Because as we saw in Peru with the coastal El Nino a few months back, over 150 bridges were destroyed and 2,000 kilometers of roads were either destroyed or damaged. So if things get built in the wrong place, in a floodplain, for instance, or if things don't get built, factoring in potential climate change impacts, then the longevity of these infrastructure is going to be cut short. So I think the planning process, especially within finance ministries, within planning ministries, energy ministries, the focus on sustainable infrastructure really does have to be front and center.
Is this happening in most of countries?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. I mean, the Paris Agreement and the Sustainable Development Goals were adopted in 2015. So most of the multilateral development banks are now looking very seriously at how to support their client countries implement these commitments under the Paris Agreement. And it's very encouraging, for instance, in the case of the Inter-American Development Bank, they now have a target to ensure that 30% of their total lending by 2020 goes to climate-related projects. They're roughly on 22% at the moment, so they definitely seem to be on the right track. But there's no getting away from the fact that Latin America is extremely vulnerable to climate change impacts. You know, we only have to look at the forest fires in Chile earlier this year, the floods and mudslides in Colombia and Peru, which led to over 400 deaths, I think, tragically in both cases, as in the total. You know, the region is very vulnerable. So you can't really think about development planning without factoring in these climate change impacts. But what's encouraging is that if these countries embrace the opportunities offered by the low carbon transition, they can reduce the risks to which they're exposed in terms of the changing climate, but also embrace these opportunities from a low carbon economy.
And right now, I think with the United States demonstrating a little bit more of a closer economy, we are seeing a more aggressive presence from China in dealing and trading and investing with Latin American countries. How do you see this partnership going forward in terms of making that infrastructure environmentally friendly?
So China's role in Latin America has, for the most part, been focused on securing access to natural resources, especially energy, agricultural commodities as well. What is perhaps encouraging is China's latest policy paper on the region talks a little bit more than the previous one released in 2008 about prioritizing climate change, environmental protection, and renewable energy. This shift really needs to happen rather quickly, and encouragingly, we're at least seeing greater interest from Chinese companies investing in renewables in Latin America, for instance. But there's no escaping the fact that a considerable chunk of Chinese investment and trade in the region is with in highly polluting and carbon intensive products. So I think what will hopefully prove to be a bit of a wake up call, given the Trump administration's decision to leave the Paris Agreement, is that if Latin American countries are now worried about whether the Paris Agreement's objectives can actually now be secured, given the US departure, looking at its international partnerships with China or Canada or the EU, for instance, it really needs to be pressuring these governments to be supporting them implement both the Sustainable Development Goals and the Paris Agreement. So it's this idea that in terms of investment trade decisions, the climate low carbon bit can't just be kind of tapped on at the end in terms of the planning process. Investment promotion agencies, finance ministries, trade ministries need to be putting these goals in terms of sustainability, climate goals, very much at the start of the planning process to reflect both the urgency in dealing with these issues, but also the potential for actually capitalizing on on low carbon growth. If they don't do that, then I'm a little skeptical about whether this kind of necessary shift in Chinese investment and trade in the region will shift to where it should be.
Guy, is there anything that you think I should have asked you and I didn't?
No, I mean, these have been great questions. I mean, it's a beast of a topic. So there's so much.
I learned a lot today, and hopefully we'll have more good news towards this subject and towards policymaking in the region.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, fingers crossed, right?
Yeah. Thank you very much again for your time.
Thanks for listening. For more, visit as-coa.org.